Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
You get the first ray of light and the last ray of light.
Peace and quiet, worth its weight in gold.
We're coming to you from Galaganban.
The whole of Nevertire are our neighbours.
Check out Corinda.
Welcome to Growin', to the club in the scrub.
I've lived in Gadigal all my life.
We drove into Lightning Ridge and I was coming home.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
Welcome to Outback Out Loud, Season 3, Villages.
In this season, we explore stories and life experiences from the most remote centres in New South Wales.
This is Outback Out Loud Live, a special live event recorded in Lightning Ridge.
In this episode, we hear music from Lightning Ridge songwriter Logan Losey and an interview with bush poetry duo Mel and Susie.
Hi, my name's Logan Losey. I don't know if you already heard of me, but sometimes I do little performances here once in a while and sometimes around town, especially during Easter Festival. I went home real quick before the show started to get my jumper because it was really cold, and I found out my roommate's galah died. Oh, pet galah, yeah. His name was George. He was a fun man, you know, fun dude. But so I was just going to sing a little song I made 2 years ago about a galah in memory of George.
Sky, blah, blah.
All right then.
Hello, Caroline.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank
you.
How
are you since I last saw you?
I'm very good.
Yeah, thanks for those.
About 4 hours ago.
slice, that was delicious.
You're welcome.
All right, let's start this interview. Question number one. You teamed up in 2008, and what brought you two together?
Well, it was probably grief, really, honestly. I had been living with my grandmother for 25 years and she got breast cancer and I nursed her at home until she passed away. And then my whole life changed. I had a car and a tent and I travelled around Australia doing my poetry. I was already a professional poet by that point. My marriage failed and I met Susan, who had a story of her own, and we started to work together. And it was grief that we connected over.
And I was a professional person in Canberra, wore a suit with a briefcase every day, you know, in and out of court every day, doing all sorts of serious things. I did sing in choirs and I sang in a folk band and dabbled with my own art. I was a maker of gates and I still am hoping to keep making my gates. But ostensibly my life was a professional life and I was very happy. I had a beautiful family And really about 25 years ago, everything changed for me. I lost my whole family, my brother first, then my mum, then my dad, then my sister. In a very short time, I buried my entire family and my life changed and turned upside down. I didn't care about my life and my career. I was an assistant secretary for a very big trade union and really the politics was my life. And from that point on, I just didn't care. I needed to go on some kind of serious healing journey and I just happened to have an old bus and I thought if I just go for 3 months, I got such comfort from the bush, from being at a beach or being in a forest or being in a desert. The only thing that gave me any consolation was the bush. So as Melanie says, I was a bit feral. I'd be up in the hills. And every now and then I'd hear about a little festival and I'd run down and have a hit of people and music and great food. And then
she'd scamper back to the bush.
So it just so happened that one of these festivals was a little bush poetry festival. And they said, do you know any poems? I said, I know hundreds of bloody poems. I know thousands of the things. And I got a real hit from performing that weekend.
And she met my friend Jean Lindley there. Jean Lindley was in her 80s and she kept saying, my best friend Melanie Hall does poetry. You should meet my best friend Melanie
I thought
Hall.
If she's anything like you, I'm going to avoid a lot of the play. I was honest to God. She said, no, you should meet up with the other poets and see this Melanie Hall. So I turned up to a festival. To be quite honest, I don't want to be cheeky about this, but I was used to winning a bit of money at the competitions. I'd walk in, do a few poems, come out with $3,000 or $4,000 in your pocket, and I thought, this is great. And I turned up, Melanie was the judge, and I didn't win a cent. Not a brass razoo.
You forgot your poem.
Yeah, but I made it up on the spot and it all rhymed.
She did. She made it up on the spot and it all rhymed. And in a competition, you have to take away points for memorisation. But I wrote on the bottom, that was really good. I was very impressed. I've taken 10 points off you.
Where's me money? Where's me money? Anyway, I gave Melanie a lift down the road from Bundaberg down to Brisbane. And we're just staying at an oval. We just did the Kilcoy Oval. And there was a little festival on. And I knew the guy from the festival. He said, will you two throw on a show? I said, I've got Melanie Hall here. She's a 3 times Australian champion. She's a great performer. Why don't we throw something on together? So a serendipity. We were completely by chance. We ended up doing a show together. We were bouncing off each other. We had no time for any rehearsal, no time for any planning. We just threw it on the stage and we had an absolute ball.
And we just clicked. Susan had been travelling on her own. I'd been travelling on my own and we started to work together and travel.
So much more fun to be with someone, to go over a horizon with a magnificent view and be able to say, oh, look at that. You're on your own going, look at that. Oh, yeah, it's great. No. And you've always got a safety net when you've got someone on stage with you because we both came from that place of terrible grief. You know, it might be a really bad day, the anniversary of my mum's death or Melanie's nonny, but there's someone there to support you all the time. When you're a duo, we quickly realised we were far better together than we ever were apart.
So it seems so important for you two to do this work, but can you tell us more about why it's important to celebrate Australian verse and bush poetry?
I think it's partly keeping the tradition of Australian bush poetry, which we have different ideas on what Australian poetry is compared to poetry of other worlds.
I come from a free verse background where pretty much anything goes, and Australian bush poetry is full of very strict rules that they made up for themselves, and they're very insistent that you keep these ridiculous rules, which are all nonsense.
But anyway, we both do agree that Australian bush poetry is a storytelling tradition, and that's really important to us. We both love stories. We love sharing stories with people, whether they're funny stories or serious stories or political stories, and it's that joy of connection, I think, for us.
And for us also, the traditional work is very important. I mean, there was a historian called Bill Scott, and he said that when the convicts first came to Australia, these in chains, they brought with them their invisible luggage, and their invisible luggage was the stories and the songs of their life that they had been forced to abandon. So the very first bush poem was written in Australian soil, was written by a bloke called Frank the Convict, and it's a great big long whinge. I guess you could, you expect that, eh? Oh, I'm here in the chains and I'm chopped, oh, and it's life's terrible. Well, I mean, you're a convict, Frank. How good is it going to get, you know? So we like to play with that traditional work, and there's all sorts of things that you can do. You can take a poem that was written in 1890 by an amazing Australian bush poet called Julian Stewart. He was a trade unionist. He had a relationship with the Indigenous people that people in 1890 simply did not have. He was just an incredible person. He wrote a poem called Boko, which is a one-eyed horse. And then 120 years later,
I wrote the answer to the poem. I wrote a sequel. And our friend Milton, who we used to travel and work with, would perform the original poem and I would come out and do the sequel, and it worked beautifully together. And we're both of the idea that you can keep the original intent of the classical poem but modernise it slightly. So we'll sometimes do it in two voices. We might change it from third person to first person.
We do that a lot. And we find there's no harm in doing that. It's a way of modernising, and it's a way of representing the material, if you like. And of course, we live in Lightning Ridge, so we do poems about Walgett. Banjo Patterson wrote a beautiful poem called Come By Chance, which is about a town just down the road. You can change and manipulate the poetry around. I mean, I guess I'm the worst for this, because I'll take something and spoonerise it. You might have. So what's the second verse of Waltz and Matilda, eh? Down came a jumbuck
to drink at the
billabong.
To drink at the billabong. Up jumped the swagman and grabbed him with glee.
So you can change that around, you know. Down came the bumjuck to drink at the brinkathong. Up jumped the slagman and stabbed him with glee. And he stang as he stuffed that bumjuck in his bucket tag. Cool hummer maltzing Matilda mithwe. And everyone's looking at you going, what the heck did she just say? But they all know the words, so it doesn't really matter.
So individually, can you tell us Mel, you can tell us about the first time that you actually did a performance? Like, did you always want to be in entertainment or what?
Well, look, my first performance was at primary school when I played the Cat Princess. And I've always loved doing some sort of performance. I was involved in theatre in Townsville, but I come from a family of storytellers. My father's been writing poetry since before I was born, and his father was legendary for his storytelling and his poetry in central Queensland. And he was called the Gan, the Barefooted Gan or the Galloping Gan, and he was just an amazing man. So there's all of those years of storytelling in the family. Which...
That's 100 years of bull dust for Melanie, 100 years of storytelling in her family. Incredible. Yeah.
And for me, actually, it was a little bit of a challenge when I started to write poetry, because that was really my dad's thing. From when I was the tiniest little girl, he followed us around the house and would recite his poetry to us. Instead of bedtime stories, he would read us his poetry. And when I started to write poetry, it felt like I was stepping on my dad's toes, but he is so proud of what I have done over the years.
And one of the wonderful things, of course, is that Melanie's father, he not only writes bush poetry, he's a performer as well. And whenever it's possible, he gets on stage with us. Yeah. And any show we ever do is so much better with Frank Fayers, because he's such a funny, wonderful little guy, isn't he?
He's great. Not that I'm biased.
what about you?
Look, the truth is we're both born entertainers. We're both complete show-offs. And that's it, isn't it? But the thing is, I went into my professional world, went to university, you know, had a career, and it's a very strange thing that it took the death of my parents to get me onto the path that I should have been on all along. I mean, we're both really comfortable on stage. We're both naturals on stage, and it really, you know, you think about When I finished high school, what I really wanted to do was go to NIDA, but I was too scared because it meant so much to me that if you get knocked back, it'll break your heart. So it's better to take another path and think that might have been possible. And here we both are doing exactly what we want to be doing, eh? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Great. What sets Australian bush poetry and verse apart from other forms of poetry? Oh, why is it unique? Why does it hold a place in history? There's two parts.
I think that the main thing is about bush poetry is it's the story of everyday people.
Yeah.
It's ordinary people's stories. There's you don't need to go and do a degree in English literature, which you do to understand some poetry, and it's very highbrow and it's very exclusive to ordinary people. So, I mean, I'm not saying all of it's good. Some of it's absolutely dreadful. We know. We've read it. We've judged lots of competitions. You don't know how bad it gets. But there's some
but
really...
But there's bad free verse as well as good shocking free verse. It's the same with all poetry. There's good and bad.
So. Yeah, of course there is. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. But it's the way that Rudyard Kipling wrote for ordinary working class English, the same as C.J. Dennis wrote in the vernacular. Sort of 1920, he's writing in the way that people speak on the streets, and nobody had done that before. So, and so it's ordinary. Ordinary working experiences, it's the, you know, without getting too political, it's the working class, it's working people's, especially out in the bush where, for example, our friend Milton, the best bush poet who's ever lived in Australia, Milton worked in a shearing shed from the age of about 14 or 15.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of the old blokes in the shearing shed couldn't read or write. One person would read the newspaper out to them all sitting around listening. One person would know The Man from Snowy River off by heart and would stand up and recite it. So it's very much, then their stories would become the poem out of that shearing shed, very much ordinary people's lives and experience. So I think that's the thing that sets it apart.
Mm. So for any budding poets in the audience, can you tell us a little bit about how you write your original poems and what's the process, basically?
Stick to stuff you know.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Or write about what you know.
Or if you want to write a something that you're interested in but you don't know about it, at least do your research. So, for example, you might be really interested in pit ponies down mines and how do they get the ponies down there? What were their lives like when they were down the mine? There's so much written about it. Do all your research. Learn about your material or else stick to the stuff that you know. And so that's the first thing. If you're having trouble getting your stuff to rhyme and having trouble getting that metric pattern, find some poems that you really do like. If the bush christening your favourite or The Owl and the Pussycat Went to Sea is your favourite poem, use that metric pattern to write yours. Yeah, that's just for practice, to see if you can make it rhyme, you can make the scansion work. So they're the two main things. But also you're looking for different ways to say things. So just for an example, Melanie wrote a poem about a goanna getting into her chook pen. Now that doesn't seem too exciting and too thrilling, although the poem is nail-bitingly thrilling, of course. So, but Melanie, all it is a goanna in the chook shed. So you've got to think about the ways that you describe this goanna. So she calls it, you know, that dirty great iguana. She calls it a prehistoric lizard. She calls it, you know, the big goanna, the 6'7" lizard stuffing eggs into his gizzard. So you're always looking for an ordinary turn of phrase. We'll just do that verse for you. So how does it go again? You wrote it.
I was drinking tea with Gail when she saw the empty pail and I mentioned that me chooks were off the lay and might be crook.
We were on Mel's back veranda when we saw something meander down the back towards the chook house. So we went to have a look. We found this 6'7" lizard stuffing eggs into his gizzard while the chooks were having kittens.
Which you very rarely find. That'll do you for now.
So you take an ordinary phrase when the chooks were having kittens, you know, and then you take it literally.
Yeah.
So, I mean, find a different way to say something. Find a cute, interesting way to say it. And, yeah. And there, that'll lift your poetry a bit, hey?
Yeah. Well, that was a lovely example of you two kind of working together. And I know that we talked about it earlier, but I'd really like to hear about how you practice. Or don't practice. What's the technique?
So you're looking at two people who probably ought to practice.
But we don't. We've been working together for, 17 years or something, and we perform every day. So basically our practice is on the stage.
So the more you're in front of an audience, the more you practice, the more comfortable you'll be, the more you'll relax and let that hip go and, you know, just be and be yourself and be as natural as you possibly can.
Listening to John talk, there are so many similarities between what we do and what John does, and it sounds like there wouldn't be. He's a painter, but the fact that he works every day, that he paints every day, that he practices.
And the fact that he was accused of selling out.
That's right.
You know, oh, you're making reproductions of your art instead of selling the originals. You're making fridge magnets. And we cop the same thing. We cop it absolutely, don't we?
Because you think of a bush poetry, you think of the man from Snowy River, you think of dead
poets.
Dead poets, and you think of dead horses and gum trees. And we do an element of that within our work, but we modernise it. We do a lot of comedy. We always do something serious. We always do something traditional. But we put a little bit
comedy,
of singing in. We do duo work. So it's not the traditional bush poetry.
And comedy's the glue that holds our show together. Yeah. There's people accuse us all the time, oh, you're selling out. Why don't you just give us all this poem after poem after poem? We said, because people will stab themselves with plastic forks and they will never, ever come back. If we can pull them into our show with a bit of singing, a bit of yarn spinning from Queensland, she's fully Queensland bull, if we can pull them in with comedy, then they'll stay and they'll listen to the poem and think, I enjoyed that poem. And it's a way of pulling people
and
in.
If you
we cop it about the sellout.
And if you pull them in with something like that, the one thing they'll take away with them is the one serious poem of the night.
Right.
Or the one traditional of the night. Yeah. That's what they carry away with them. And when John was saying he likes to work out and do street art because he's out with people, and painting can be a very lonely profession. So can writing. It's the same thing. It's all in your head. You're just writing. You're there on your own. And some people never perform. They only write their poetry and put it in a drawer or put it in a book. But some people like to take it out.
You've toured across Australia. You've gone overseas. Mm. And I really wanted to know about those fond memories.
There are some really special moments for us. We were working in Winton for 8 years before we came to Lightning Ridge. And we were doing a show, and we started with a really patriotic starting piece written by Henry Lawson. And there was a woman sitting at a table there, and from that first patriotic piece, she started to weep. And for the entire show, for an hour, she was sobbing. Tears were running down her cheek and falling off her chin. And we were both really conscious
acutely
of her,
aware.
Acutely aware of what she was doing, but we did the show. Serious, funny. And then at the end, we immediately went straight to the woman and we both held her and we said, my darling, what's wrong? And what did she say?
She said, my brother was killed in the bushfires a few years ago. She said when she sat down that night that she remembered that she loved the bush as well, and she remembered how much her brother loved it, and it brought it all back to her, and she just started sobbing and sobbing. It was, again, it's about a healing journey. It was about her connection back to her own homeland.
This is the first time I've been proud of my country.
Yeah, it
since
broke
I
our
lost my
hearts.
Brother, and it broke our hearts, but it was so special.
The only thing for me that's a bit of an issue with bush poetry is we tend to stay away from the politics very, very seriously. And we tend to do, whereas the slam poetry is all political, and that's why I do slam poetry as well, because I'm a political person, and I that passion to say what you really feel and to do all of this kind of rah, I really feel the need to do that, and I don't feel complete without doing that. So we do a bit of slam stuff, and when we went to Edinburgh, we were at the UK final of the slam poetry, and it was just a great joy
we
for us
weren't
to
competing
connect with
in that.
Them.
We were just watching.
Yeah. But to be in that environment
was
wonderful.
It was just beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're coming up to our final question. And basically it's a bit similar to how we ended with John, which is, Lightning Ridge, you're here. Why? And why is this place so special, and how did you come to be here?
Well, when we got out of jail, the judge sentenced us to 5,000 hours of bush poetry and life imprisonment in Lightning Ridge, and this isn't true at all. Why are we here, Melanie?
We came here in 2011, I think it was, for the first time, and we drove into Lightning Ridge. We were going to spend a month here doing some shows at the Opal Caravan Park, which had just opened, and we drove into Lightning Ridge, and I was coming home. I have never felt that. We lived on the road full-time for 10 years. We had no home base but our bus, and I felt this country welcome me, and I just said, this is where I need to be. I had $5,000 cash in my pocket. There was a camp for sale with an old caravan and a mine shaft on it, and it was $5,000. And I said to Susie, I'm going to buy the camp.
I thought, oh, well, I'm a solo act now. Hey, I'm not bloody staying.
And we just, I fell in love with the place. We went away and we did our life and we ended up coming back.
It's a beautiful place. It's an incredibly friendly, welcoming. I've never known a town like this. We love Lightning Ridge. Come to Lightning Ridge if you're listening to this.
Come to Lightning Ridge if you're listening to this. Come to Lightning Ridge. It accepts all sorts of people.
Look at us.
All sorts of characters. And it accepts eccentricities and it's just a wonderfully inclusive place.
Mm, we love it.
Yeah. And am I putting you on the spot to say that you've got a poem about it?
About Lightning Ridge?
Yeah.
We got hundreds of poems about Lightning Ridge.
On.
Oh, we were going to do a little Sookie emotional one, hey?
Oh, do you want to do the Sookie emotional one?
Yeah, do the Sookie emotional one. This pretty much sums up when we first met. Melanie was in Townsville, I was in Canberra, and I wrote her a fax machine. Do any of the young people know what that is? I sent her a fax with a poem on it, and Melanie rang me up immediately. She said, that poem broke my heart.
It's called Sunrise. I've cried too many wasted tears.
I've been a fool too many times.
I listen to my past and hear days with no reason and no rhyme.
I've got the reins.
I'm in control.
I know what each new day is for.
I'm not too old to rock and roll.
And each new dawn's an open door.
I am the sunrise. I've done my time as woman scorned.
I've done that, sorry for myself.
But yesterday, my future dawned.
And my today's in perfect health.
My next mistake won't be my last.
I am not pure in word or deed.
I am the product of my past.
I am the mongrel, not the breed.
I am the sunrise. Through all those years, I didn't care. But now I've learned both yes and no.
I've seen the map to everywhere.
It's not too far.
It's time to go.
I'll take my place behind the wheel.
I'm not the passenger this time.
It's time to be the way I feel.
I am the sun.
You watch me climb.
I am the sunrise.
Thanks for listening. To hear more amazing stories from Outback New South Wales, check out the whole Outback Out Loud series, now streaming everywhere.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history.
Please like, subscribe, rate us and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. The Outback Out Loud community project and workshop series was designed and facilitated by Signal Creative. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au, and you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.